Once again, take a moment to stretch up and settle in. Lengthening the spine helps with alertness. Body relax. Helps with openness. The face is smooth, the jaw loose, the arms just hang limp, the shoulders relaxed. Now bring your attention to your body from the viewpoint of the ordinary physical sensations that are there, the contact of body part with body part, the contact with the floor, the clothes, the air. The muscles working, creating the in-breath and the out-breath, the heartbeat, the pulse. If you have itches, pressures, pain due to posture or other situations, if your stomach is full or empty, if there are any sensations associated with fatigue, or sleepiness, or heat, or cold, all of these are under the category of touch in our system. Let your attention freely float through the body, noting touches. If other phenomena arise, emotional sensation, mental image, internal talk, external sound. If your eyes are open, external sight. Let those phenomena arise, but gently return to the world of touch. Just for now. Every few seconds, acknowledge a touch. It could be a big area or a small area. If you wish, you can make the mental label touch at that moment. Then intently but gently focus on that touch, whether if it completely disappears instantly, then fine, note some other touch. If it lasts, soak your attention into it and then note again, either the same touch or a different one. We're separating out one aspect of ordinary experience in the body, separating it from the mind and from the emotional body. Okay, good. Now, it's possible that there's something emotional going on in your body right now. Or there may not be. Either situation is fine. But if there's something emotional going on in your body, then switch to noting feel. Focus on what seems to be the body part of the emotion. A certain amount of guessing and groping may be involved with this. That's okay. If it's an unpleasant emotion, anger, fear, sadness, embarrassment, impatience, and so forth, try to the best of your ability to accept that sensation in your body. If it's a pleasant sensation like interest, joy, love, excitement, gratitude, smile, laughter, then experience that in a state of openness, not trying to push it down, but also not needing for it to last. Bring equanimity to the pleasure. Notice if you bring equanimity to the discomfort, at some point it may not bother you. And if you bring equanimity to the pleasure, at some point it may become more satisfying. Of course, there may be nothing emotional in your body right now, in which case your emotional centers are resting in a peaceful state. Good. In that case, just continue to note touch. If nothing else, the touch of the breath is always there. And certainly, after enough time, discomfort arises in your legs, your back. You can always move, but you can also soak your attention into it, ask your body to accept it. So continue to note touch, but if feel is present, let's take that as a window of opportunity to explore the emotional body. But you don't need to make it be there or create it. We're doing pure observation, just working with what comes up of its own. Okay, good. Now let go of that and bring your attention to talk space. In your head and or at your ears, position your attention and hold your attention there to the best of your ability. Moment by moment, you may be aware of talk. It could be well defined or just a subtle undercurrent. It could be your voice, somebody else's voice, monologue, dialogue. It could be coherent or incoherent. Whenever you're aware of activity there, talk activity, note talk, and listen. It may vanish immediately, or it may stick around. If it vanishes, then fine. Stay in talk space. What happens next? Either there is quiet, or more talk activity starts. There may never be quiet. It might be one sentence after another, that's fine. Just note each sentence as a new instance of talk. Or there might not be much talk. It might be quiet most of the time. Fine. But stay in talk space and hear that quiet. When something else comes up, sight, sound, touch, feel, or image, what will that do? Will it stimulate a comment? Then note that as talk. Or will it turn off talk space? Maybe when a sound arises, sound expands, but talk contracts and becomes quiet. Then be aware. Talk has stopped. You're just in talk space listening to quiet. Talk may immediately vanish every time you note it. Good, that's insight into impermanence. Or it may stick around. Good, then listen to it. If it's just quiet, good. Enjoy that restful state.
free choice.
Now, it's possible that at this time there is visual thinking going on. When you think about people, places, physical objects, you get an impression of their form, perhaps vivid, more likely rather vague. When you have memory, plan, fantasy, when you're thinking about things or situations that you want, when you're thinking about your present surroundings or your appearance, you're thinking about your body as opposed to sensing your body with touch or feel. Under all these circumstances, there may be mental image. If at this time there is enough image activity to justify noting image, do so. Whenever there's a visual thought, note image, with or without the mental label. Focus on that image. It may vanish immediately or it may stick around. If there's no image for a little while, then just be aware of the dark, bright, or gray in front of, behind your closed eyes, in the center of image space. That represents a blank mental screen. Enjoy the restful blank until image activity starts. Again, if at this time there's not much image activity, there's just blank, that if you want, you can note talk. If there's also not much talk activity, there's just quiet, good, then go back and note feel. If at this time there's no feel activity, there's just emotional peace in your body, good, then go back and note touch. If there doesn't seem to be hardly any touch, well, there's certainly breathing. Your abdomen, your chest, your nostrils. There are physical sensations. Note that as touch. There's always something you can work with. One is just as good as the other. In any case, you're developing concentration, sensory clarity, and equanimity. Right. Okay, we're going to open it up. If there are any reports on your experience or questions, feel free. Image space.
Image space, okay. And then I check it. All right, hearing something, or okay, something is appearing in my talk. And I notice it. But what's happened later is, let's say if I stay in the talk space, and I notice what's happening around. First time, I can notice, okay, here is a talk. Second time, it's like the talking coming from the same gate where I'm standing. So it's like taking me. I cannot follow it. And then I find myself, oh, I'm talking. I even didn't notice it. It's like it's not so easy to separate it. Sometimes it's in the same, like in the same line, in the same road. You understand what I mean?
I believe so. Let me repeat to make sure. I'm in talk space. Sometimes when talk comes up, I can note it. But other times, before I realize it, I am the talk. And I'm already, the hijacker is in the cockpit and flying the plane.
In the love.
Yes, and the same thing happens in image, feel, touch, and so forth. What should I do? The basic answer is don't worry about it and keep practicing, because the reason we're practicing is to develop the skill to be able to detect that. So certainly, it's like hitting a tennis, okay? You don't expect that every ball is going to go over perfectly. Just some of them go well, and the other ones hit the net or go out of the court. But that's what you're practicing your swing for. And then with time, your skill grows. So one answer to your question is, well, that's okay. And with time, the situation will improve. However, I do have another suggestion. We can think of touch, feel, image, and talk as being sort of like valleys, and we tend to, the water of consciousness tends to flow into those valleys and get trapped. We tend to get pulled into the valley of body-mind identity. So how can we keep out of the valley? You might say, how can we keep on the plane instead of getting pulled into this hole? I do have a suggestion. You'll remember that as I have set up the structure for you, the practice of noting consists of a sequence of individual acts of noting. Each individual act of noting typically consists of two parts: a moment of clear acknowledging, and then a longer couple seconds of intently focusing. So it's acknowledge, focus, acknowledge, focus. Typically. Why I say typically is sometimes as soon as you acknowledge it, it's gone. So then you can't focus on it. During that moment of clear acknowledging, I have said you have an option to mentally label or not. Just acknowledge without the mental label. You have a third option. Besides simply acknowledging quietly or acknowledging with an intentional thought label, The third possibility is to speak the label out loud. Feel. 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 I'm saying it out loud. I have pleasant feel because I'm looking at all of you, and that makes me happy. When you say the label out loud, you can't do that in the meditation hall for obvious reasons, unless you want a lot of people here to have negative feel about you. But what you can do is go off on your own. Go to a room, go out in nature, force yourself to say the label out loud. The speaking of the label out loud is a very objective event, and it tends to pull you out of the valley of subjectivity. It's a biofeedback device, actually. As long as you're hearing
close to them
in a gentle, matter-of-fact voice, the continuity of the spoken label guarantees concentration. The gentle and matter-of-fact voice gives you equanimity, so that you're now catching the phenomenon as soon as it arises, and the tone of voice reminds you to just open up to that. At some point, if you don't hear yourself speaking the label, that means you're spacing out or getting caught up. Conversely, if you reinstate the label, you're not spacing out, you're not getting caught up. So the prescription, the drug, the medicine for what you're describing is spoken labels for a while, until you reestablish enough concentration that you're not so caught in things. And then you can come back and have it with no labels or mental labels. So if you're having difficulty with concentration, or if you find that you identify with the touch, feel, or image talk before you realize it and you're just being hijacked, then try spoken labels for a while. How long is a while? Well, a half hour, half a day, 2 days, however long it takes to pull you out of the valley of subjectivity. Now, I say this, but most people don't want to do this, okay? Even though I tell you it will work, people don't want to. It requires effort. And it seems like a lesser version of the real practice. Okay, it's like, well, in the United States, if you're not good in English, if you can't spell, they make you take English 101. We call it dumbbell English. Okay, it's like English, you're too stupid to do English. Okay, so. By the way, I had to take dumbbell English 3 times, just, so there is hope for anyone. In college, I had to take it 3 times. Anyway, there's a tendency to think, oh, if I'm speaking the labels out loud, that's dumbbell vipassana. I'm a child of a lesser god, I'm not doing it the real way, etc., etc. So here's my metaphor. You have a car, and that car has gears. There's a first gear, second, third, fourth gear. You encounter a hill, you go into first gear. That first gear is there to deal with hills. You don't say, I got a crappy car because I have to go into first gear to negotiate this steep hill. That's what that gear's for. The way I set up the noting process, spoken labels, our first gear. Going up a hill, speak them out loud. Mental label is second and third gear. And then no labels, just acknowledge, focus, that's cruise control. Okay? or a fourth gear or something like that. You shift gears depending on the topography, the lay of the land, what you're encountering. When we do this practice, sometimes it's uphill, sometimes it's flat, sometimes it's downhill. So my recommendation, if you're getting caught up or spaced out, is spoken labels for a while. Okay? So that's good. Good. Other reports or questions, just feel free. Yes.
About image, I find out that subtly I have in my body the image of the shape of my body almost always there. And I play a game with this and try to drop it, and only to feel the sensation. And then my shape is, or my body become really freaked out. Like, it's felt like not my body anymore. And I wonder if it's okay to drop this image away intentionally or not.
Okay, you just asked a bunch of really good questions. You're able to actually turn off the body image at will? When you say drop, you mean sort of make it go away? It is possible
almost,
to do that. Yeah, at will you could just say sort of like vanish and the body image disappears.
Take a while, difficult.
Right. And then you're left with only sensation. But because there's no image of the body, now things are getting all flowing and unusual and maybe interesting, but maybe a little scary too. Do I sort of have it right?
It's not scary.
Oh, it's not scary. You like it. Well, good for you. Some people, the first time that happens, it's scary. Okay. This is a number of questions rolled into one, so let me address each question. First of all, it's a good insight if you happen to notice that, hey, there is, like a lot of the time, there's a mental picture of the body. Most people aren't aware that their perception of body comes about through two sources. The actual sensations, which are the touch and the feel, and then the mental picture of the body. Those two are often both involved. So if the fact that you were able to notice that there, the image is one thing, the sensation, the touch and the feel is something else, very good insight. That's good sensory clarity. Now, you reported an ability to turn off the image. In the techniques I'm giving you right now, we wouldn't intentionally turn off an image. However, that doesn't mean that's a bad thing to do. It just means that's a different technique. That's part of an approach that I call the restful states, where we're attempting to have blank, okay, quiet, relaxation, peace. That's a different approach. It's valid, and in fact, it's one of the things I teach people to do. So it's certainly not incorrect to do that. Although I would say, strictly speaking, with the techniques I'm now giving you, you would not intentionally turn off the image. But that, as I say, is completely valid if you're interested in exploring the restful side of things. Let's say that you don't turn the image off, but you just note it and accept it. Does the image tend to be stable, or does it sort of flow around a bit?
Quite stable.
It's stable. So turning it off helps to create a more a different kind of experience. Let's see here. Let's say you turn off the image. You're left with sensations. What happens to those sensations? What change takes place?
Are the same, but they are not located like in the right place of the body. Start to move, and there's no sense of body, like legs and hands and back.
So sensation is still present, but now it doesn't have the normal shape of the body. And does it start to get larger than the body?
Yeah.
So it becomes more like a cloud or a sphere. And less like the normal shape of the body. Do the sensations become more like wave at that time? more like not so stable, but there's a lot of movement, vibration, and so forth?
A bit. I haven't experienced for a long while.
Okay. I would say if you want to turn off the image and let the body sensations go through that change and note that as touch or feel, that's okay. It's a way of exploring things. If your body sensations hug the normal outline of the body, that's good. Let that happen. If the normal outline of the body dissolves and the sensations expand and become more like a sphere or a cloud, that's good too. Let that happen. Okay, so either is fine. It's okay if it's exactly where the body is in the normal shape. Let that be. But if the normal shape breaks down and it becomes more like a cloud or a sphere, a ball, then let that happen. Both are natural. It's natural that the touch or feel be in its normal place and size, but it's also natural for the touch and feel to start to become large, okay, like turn into a giant ball, and so forth. Let either one happen without preference. So that's a few things I would say. If there is an image of the body and sensations of the body, and you're not aware that the image is image and the sensations are sensations, that then produces a sense that the body is a thing and material. The first step in breaking that down is to realize that part of the perception is the image and the other part is the sensations. So instead of image times sensations, like 10 times 10, you just have image plus sensations, 10 plus 10. That's already starting to somewhat become free of the materiality of the body. Next step is that the image may start to flow, and the image itself gets distorted and expands and contracts and vibrates, and the sensations do the same thing. So now the image and the sensations are turning into one field of energy. Now the sense of material body is starting to dissolve. Okay?
The image, as I understand it, is something conceptual, and sensation is a direct experience.
I would totally disagree with that. I would say that image is a tangible sensory visual experience. It's just as sensory as sensation. It's not a concept. It's visual, it's a picture, and it can be penetrated. You can sweep through it, you can observe it, you can see the impermanence in image and talk just as well as you can have impermanence in touch or feel. As you can in sight or sound. All sensory experiences that I give you, touch, sight, sound, feel, image, talk, none of those are concepts. Those are all sensory events. They exist in time and space, and they're penetratable and observable. Now, it is true that image and talk may carry a concept, but they themselves are not concepts. They're sensory events. It is also true that if you wish to penetrate sensation, you have to ignore the images. However, you may want to penetrate images. That's completely valid. That's how it relates to the body sweeping. Because I know Mr. Goenka says ignore the images. Well, that's right, because he wants you to penetrate touch and feel. But that doesn't mean that they are concepts. I would disagree with him.
Just to explain the word impermanence.
We'll be talking a lot about it later on. Yes?
2 days ago, I said I keep hearing a talking all the time. And now when I'm noting the talk, it's
Okay, good. First of all, you're now noticing that when you note the talk, it disappears. By the way, that is... it blurs, it sort of like just turns into a vibration or something, the talk. Both of those are examples of araiyut. But now you're saying, well, let me ask you, previously did you have very much images or not too much?
I didn't think I
had. And now you realize you do have. But so at first there wasn't enough, now there's too much. So it turns into a movie, I mean literally into a movie where it's like a connected story, or just a lot of images one after another? Right. So image space has become active for you. Just note image, and each time there's a new image, note image. And that's it. Just let that be. Let that happen.
Can you explain why it's so different? Talk and experience is pretty much alike. Why is it so different that the talk that you see it is gone and the image you see it and it
persists? It's not necessarily the case. So the question was, why is it that the talk immediately disappears, but the images, when you note them, but the images don't disappear, in fact, they get more frequent? That's not necessarily the case. Sometimes, for some people, the talk does persist. Many times, the images vanish, the individual images vanish as soon as you note them. One of the reasons you're getting more images is because I gave you the category. So now you know what to look for. That's your increase in sensitivity, in sensory clarity. Another reason you're getting more images is you're sleepy and you're dreaming, okay? Because you know, we're not sleeping as much at night, and it's, you know, hot in the day. So part of it is due to just sleepiness, because when we're sleepy, we have more image activity. The fact is, below the threshold of awareness, image activity is constantly going on. Do you know what a Rolodex is? What?
Yeah.
Okay. In the subconscious...
Some don't. Some people don't.
Can you explain what a Rolodex is?
I can say.
Do you have them? Well, you flip through it like this. Well, or you know what it means to flip through a book? Let's say you had a picture book and you could flip through it and you see many, many, many pictures. That is always going on below the threshold of awareness. Whenever we look at something in the outside world, the subconscious mind flips through a picture book of memories comparing what we see with what has been seen in the past. We're not aware of that thing, you know, because otherwise it would be very distracting. It happens automatically. Now, as you start to pay attention to images, you're starting to become aware that that's going on. And that's why you're seeing the continuous images more. But that's good. You're developing sensory clarity. Not a good word. concerning the sleep issue, two things happen at retreats with regards to sleep. The first is, when we want to be awake in the meditation hall, we get sleepy. The second is, when we want to sleep at night, we may have some difficulty. So what to do? But I've already said what to do as far as remaining alert in the meditation hall. Open your eyes, defocus them, open them. If need be, stand in place. If need be, stand in place to put your arms out like that to wake yourself up. That's what to do. But what to do if you find it difficult to get to sleep at night. I mentioned this teacher, S.N. Goenka, one of the great modern Vipassana teachers. He gives some very good advice about this. He says that this practice penetrates into the subconscious mind. So because of that, sometimes the subconscious gets very active and it's difficult to get to sleep at night. There's also the issue of we're in an unusual environment and we may be sharing a room with another person, and just there's a lot of reasons why people sometimes have difficulty getting to sleep. So what Mr. Goenka says is do two things. If you find that you can't sleep at night on a retreat or at any time, first thing, keep your body really still and relaxed so that physically the body is relaxed. In other words, don't get up, don't pace around, don't flail around in the bed. Be like, you know, like a yoga corpse posture or something. Just very, very still so the body physically relaxes and gets rest. The other thing is, for consciousness, keep a meditation technique going. I would say it doesn't matter what technique, so that your consciousness rests in the meditation technique and your body physically is still and gets physical rest. Even if you don't, what happens is if we have difficulty sleeping, either at a retreat or in daily life, what happens is it's like, oh my God, I can't get to sleep. And then I'm going to be a mess the next day, which of course creates talk, agitating feel, image, okay? And then that stimulates you, making it harder to get to sleep. And then you get even more worried. Well, that's called a vicious cycle, okay? The more you try to get to sleep, the harder it is to get to sleep because of the, I learned that word yesterday. Halatz? Lachatz, yes. Lachatz, yeah, because you have, all this lachatz. The lachatz to get to sleep prevents you from getting to sleep. What to do? How to break that vicious cycle? Don't care about falling asleep. You do not need a good night's sleep. You need a good night's rest. That's all you need. And if the body is still and consciousness is engaged in a technique, you'll get a good night's rest. I have students that have chronic pain that cannot really get to sleep very well ever. It takes usually many months, but I can teach them how to get such deep rest that they're okay, despite the fact that they don't really sleep in any normal pattern. So I just share that with you because I happen to think of it. We were talking about sleepiness. And
in regards to that,
yes.
As you might, as people learn the cycles of sleep and the REM, etc., if someone is, like you say, not having a real good night's sleep, and there's no awareness of, like, you know, sometimes you sleep and you think, okay, half the night I was half asleep, half aware of all my thoughts, and then, of course, some of the night I was sleeping, and there's no awareness to how much of it was really sleep and how much of it was this awareness, because for me personally, I fall into this
semi. Yeah, I understand.
Knowing all my thoughts, seeing all my thoughts, and being half aware and half asleep. So, what do you do about that?
That's okay. It's like I'm aware. During the night, sometimes I lose consciousness, but then sometimes I sort of semi-wake up, but I'm not really sure how much of the time I'm sort of semi-awake and how much of the time I'm asleep. When you're awake or semi-awake, have the goal to keep the body still and consciousness meditating. That way you'll get rest during a good rest, whether you lose consciousness or not. That's all I would say about that. Yes.
I want to ask about this technique. Some teachers say it's only be with the experience, or just be, okay? And you give us a very detailed math and techniques. What can be the problem or dangerous with this attitude? There is.
Okay, I need to get a little clarification. You said some teachers say just be with experience. Well, this is experience, okay? So you're saying that they say be with experience without giving you categories of being with experience.
Or very little.
Or very little categories. Every form of practice has advantages and disadvantages. And every honest teacher should be willing to tell you both the strong points and weak points of their way of practicing. So the strong point of this way of practicing is it gives you a very systematic way to be with your experience. The weak point is it's complicated. And people might become goal-driven to try to get, I don't get any images, or even though I say a million times, okay. So that would be some of the possible, the two biggest problems I would say is the complexity of it. And this is just the beginning. I have touch, sight, sound, feel, image, talk, relaxation, light, silence, peace, blank, quiet, flow, expansion, contraction, both gone. Those are the 17 categories that constitute my complete system. Those plus the relationships. That's a lot, okay? However, I would claim that that is pretty much a complete map of all and only the most important phenomena related to a psychological and spiritual growth. So, but that's very complicated. And maybe you would prefer a simpler instruction, such as just be aware. Or do nothing. Nothing wrong with that, okay? So it's very complicated. However, most people can learn it in, say, 6 months. Once they have, they've got a complete map. And they know exactly what's happening and what is an optimal way to work with it.
6 months retreat?
No, 6 months of doing one retreat, doing a few days per month for 6 months, something like that. I teach this in four-hour blocks over the telephone, and actually it takes about 10 four-hour classes to completely learn the system, but you have to spread it over, say, 6 months' time. So that's a weak point in the system. It's like complex, it's subtle. The other is because I give people categories and people want to have those categories. And they think, well, I'm supposed to do all those things, even though over and over again I say, you know, all you got to do is one of those things. But somehow it's like, well, you know, he doesn't really mean that. I'm supposed to be able to do touch, sight, sound, feel, image, talk, realization, light, silence, peace, blank, quiet, flow, expansion, contraction, both gone. And until I do all of those, I haven't really done it. Even though he says all you need to do is one of those, okay? So people can get very goal-driven with it, and that can be a problem. On the other hand, the strength is, it's like once you get it, you pretty much, we can now speak about the spiritual path with something like scientific precision. And I designed the thing to be studied by scientists, okay? This is the first system of mindfulness whose categories are specifically formulated to be conveniently imaged with modern science. Because as you folks make progress, I want to have scientific proof that you are. So there is three reasons I created it this way. One is I'd like to have a complete map. Secondly, I want to have a system that is convenient for scientists to study objectively. Thirdly, this system is designed primarily to be learned through one-on-one personal coaching. I'm teaching it here to this group because that's what we have to do. But the preferred way is that we're having a private session, or you're having a private session with one of my facilitators. So we need a lot of categories to be able to customize the guidance depending on what's coming up. Actually, what this thing represents is something called an algorithm. Okay, an algorithm. In other words, depending on what's coming up, we can change the guidance to optimize your experience. But in order to do that, we have to have a term for any significant event that could occur. So it's actually not designed for group teaching, although I have to do it this way. But if you come on a retreat with me, you'll get 90 minutes one-on-one, where we'll see exactly what's going on and optimize the guidance for that moment. So there certainly are reasons that it's made this way. However, that gives it strength, but it also gives it weakness. And when it comes to it, what I say is, you can do any form of meditation you want, okay? If you want to just be aware and do Krishnamurti, okay? Or if you want to do whatever. It's all good. If you do the system I'm presenting, then you have to do it exactly the way I'm describing it, because it's designed to work as a whole. So that's how I see the strengths and weaknesses. The strength of just be aware is very simple, and you always have the same answer, just be aware. I think you can see the possible weakness. That would be a touch, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
So you have no talk and no image. You have touch or feel?
Touch.
Well, you have the touch, obviously.
Yeah. Feel, I don't have.
No feel. So you primarily just have touch. And one of the touches is a pressure sensation here. Mm-hmm. You also presumably have other touches.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to restrict yourself to the techniques I've just given you, then you would just be noting touch, including this as one of the touches, and that's what you'd be doing. But let me ask you a question. That pressure in your third eye, does it seem like it's an... I'm going to give you several options here. Okay, it's a multiple choice question. Does it seem like it's an outward pressure only, an inward pressure only, or out and in at the same time, or neither of those? Gotta be one of those four. If you made your best guess, how would you characterize the pressure? It's an inward pressure. Is that inward pressure pleasant, unpleasant, both, or neither? Now you see algorithm, by the way. You see how precisely we can talk about people's experiences.
It
yes.
depends. Sometimes it can be pleasant, but sometimes it can be very unpleasant.
Okay. When it's pleasant, enjoy it. When it's unpleasant, try to accept that fact and still surrender to it as a contractive force. We're not going to get into this quite yet, but later in the retreat, we're going to be talking a lot about expansion and contraction as basic flavors of nature and experience. That's why I asked. I wanted to see if the pressure was expansive, contractive, bidirectional, or neither. So you say that it's contractive and sometimes pleasant, sometimes unpleasant. Now we have a very precise picture of what's going on, and I can recommend optimal strategies.
Expansion of the root, the contraction
too. Is that okay? Did everybody understand what I mean by expansion and contraction? Go ahead.
Hitrachut or hitkashtut vehitkavtzut. Expansion is hitrachut, the contraction is hitkavtzut.
Those are the two fundamental flavors of flow that I have people work with, that I learned from my teacher, a Zen master. It's sort of related to yang is expansion, yin is contraction, and they're interplay. But it's also somewhat related to the Kabbalistic concept of the chesed ugvura, okay, the allowing and the limiting. So if you have a pressure and it seems expansive, just the equanimity is surrender to the expansion, even if that makes it hurt worse. If it's contraction, the equanimity is surrender to the contraction. Just let it contract. If it seems to be doing both at the same time, let it do both. And that's how you bring equanimity. At some point, the pressure breaks up and there's just an effortless spreading of space, or an effortless collapsing of space. Or, really interesting, both at the same time, okay? However, you can't make that happen. You simply accept, okay, the pressure is contractive, the pressure is expansive, the pressure is both at the same time. As you accept it, it might intensify it a little bit, and then, at some point, it will be more flowing. Okay? Pressure in this area is quite commonly reported. Yes? Yes, go ahead.
I have two questions, very quick ones. One, do you have any trick to stay on the... You say we have four screens.
I wouldn't use the word screen. I would say four sensory spaces.
By
sensory, in this case, you mean somatic experience,
yes,
body experience.
What you call that. And I found it very hard now to shut down something and to stay with blank and not. Do you have any tip? How can I stay with blank and not drop the touch immediately? Because touch will become to be the most valid kind of.
Okay. I think I understand the question, and I will I'll address that, but if I don't understand it correctly. So you're in image space, let's say,
yes.
And you're noting images, but then for a moment there is no image, and you're immediately pulled back to the body.
Yes.
How can you stay in image space in that case? And I'm assuming the same is true for talk. You're in talk, but then there is no talk, and then you immediately get pulled back to the body. So how can you stay in talk space? Well, first of all, remember that if you don't have much image or talk activity, you don't need to work in those spaces, okay? So I'm assuming that you're having, at least from time to time, image, from time to time talk, but then the question is, when it goes away, what to do? So I can make a suggestion. If to stay in image space when there are no images, look at the dark or bright or mix the gray, and if you wish, label that blank. Make the mental label blank so that at any given instant you're either noting image or you're noting the blank, because there is no image. When you're in talk space, if there is no talk, then if you wish, you can make the mental label quiet. And you are paying attention to the quiet. So that at any given instant, you're either saying image, blank, blank, image, image. That's keeping me in image space, because now I've got a rhythm where I'm explicitly noting the restful state as if there is no order, if there's no activity there. So that would be my recommendation. Oh, and if you're in feel space and you have feel and then there is no feel, the restful state is called peace. Okay?
I found myself that a lot of times it's very difficult. I found myself that sleepiness and kind of depression are kind of mixed or vibrate, or it's not clear to me if I fight in kind of depression or kind of sleepiness, or they become to be together. I want to sleep, but I kind of not want to be here.
Okay, so there's a sleepiness, but you're also noticing something you're calling, quote, depression. I want to have a little more, ask a little bit about what the depression means. It means a sort of, I don't want to be here kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's mixed in with the sleepiness?
Yeah, because I want to be in the bed. The bed is calling me again.
Tell me about the depression. Is that just a physical discomfort, or is that an emotional discomfort?
You know, it's kind of a role that starts with kind of physical. Physical cannot be awake, that becomes to be more and more emotional, and I lost my strategy what to fight.
Okay, and is the emotional sadness, or is it impatience?
Impatience.
A kind of agitation and impatience? Like I don't want to sit still?
Impatience and frustration.
And it's a feel in the body? A feel of wanting to, of agitation in the body?
Yeah, in the body it's like this, but somehow my eyes and my brain want to shut down.
Okay. So it sounds to me like there are a number of phenomena present, but I want to make sure that I have a very accurate picture. There is sleepiness, which is, as a sensory event, a kind of touch. Your eyelids are heavy, you got yucky here, you know, you've got like yawny here, yuck here, yawn here. That's that's the touch of sleepiness. Then there is the loss of consciousness, the loss of clarity, the wilting of the posture. Those are sort of the objective side of sleepiness. Then there's the yuck and the yawn, which is the actual touch of the sleepiness. Then you're getting a kind of, in addition to the uncomfortable touch, the yuck on your eyes, the heaviness on your eyes, the yawn in your chest, etc., you're also getting some feel of
attention.
Don't want to sit still. Setzen in Spilkes. Maybe most of you don't know Yiddish, okay? I've been sitting on pins and needles, okay? So that's a kind of feel. I call that agitation or impatience. So that's the sensory phenomenology of what's going on. And there's a mixture here, because the unconsciousness is your coping mechanism for the uncomfortable touch and feel. Let's deal with the uncomfortable touch and feel by going unconscious. That is, in fact, the general coping mechanism. The general coping mechanism for uncomfortable things is tighten up and turn away. Okay, now the tighten up is no equanimity, and the turn away is no clarity. That's the normal strategy. Now we're suggesting that you open up and turn towards. Exactly the opposite strategy. So don't be surprised if it's a little bit challenging. However, let's look at the sensory events. You've got distinctive uncomfortable touch. You've got distinctive uncomfortable feel. So either no touch or no feel. Force your eyes open. That will make the touch worse. And maybe the feel worse too. Stand in place. That will help you fight. What you want to fight is the loss of clarity. But what you don't want to fight is the sensations. So you fight against the loss of clarity by opening your eyes, straightening your spine, standing in place, mental label, if need be, spoken labels, walking. All of those will help you fight against the loss of clarity. With regards to the touch and feel that come about in this circumstance, you're trying to not fight, to just, you note it as touch or you note it as feel. You can work on one or the other, and you'll be working through the phenomena. So now you see how we're getting a very precise way of talking about what we're experiencing. So that is excellent, and we're going to have a stretch break now and then come back and have a sit.